I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Years ago, I interviewed a poet who said being inspired felt like a form of possession. It was an overwhelming out-of-body experience, a physical and sensory feeling of the words of a poem coming straight at her. Her vivid description has stayed with me, and I thought of it while reading Matt Richtel's new book titled Inspired, Understanding Creativity. He talked with a number of famous creative people about their unique experiences and interviewed scientists exploring and demystifying the creative impulse, something we're all born with and too often lose as we grow up. In fact, there's something called the fourth grade slump, when doubt and rules and conformity tend to quash creativity. Richtel also dispels some myths, making it clear that creativity is not tied to high IQ scores. It's more about curiosity and open-mindedness. Matt Richtel is a reporter for the New York Times, joins us on Radio Times to help us understand how creativity has allowed us humans to survive and thrive. Matt Richtel, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
How are you? It's been a while.
It has been a while. You talked to us about your book on distracted driving. Thank you for getting up very early. I know it's very early for you there out in California. Is there a connection between being rested and creativity?
Oh, so much. I think, you know what, now today, what I'm going to have to do is just nap.
to catch and up, right?
It's the one subject I'm qualified to speak on, really, probably as one of the world's great authorities.
On napping?
Napping, yes. If you ever want to talk napping.
I do.
That's something I do really well.
Oh, excellent. Well, we will put that on hold. Let's talk about creativity. Is this something that's essentially hardwired into us human beings?
It's absolutely hardwired. I just want to seize on the example you gave of the poet. That's exactly why I wrote this book. It was that feeling I wanted to understand and that I heard so much about. I'm already derailing the conversation in the spirit of someone who doesn't play by the rules. Can I tell you a related story to your
absolutely.
About remember Peanuts? Of course you remember Peanuts, the comic strip?
I do.
So, some years ago, after I had my own emergence as a person who allowed myself to create, I did a syndicated comic strip, and my editor was the editor for Peanuts. And I asked her to tell me a story about Charles Schulz. And this was the story she told me. And it's so resonant with the one you just said about the poet. She said Charles Schulz would wake up in the morning and he'd go, "Oh my gosh, I have the idea for the perfect Peanuts strip." And he'd set about writing. And in thrall, like the poet you described, what was the way the poet described it to you? What did you just say? She said the words, how did you describe it?
As an overwhelming out-of-body experience.
Yeah, that thing. So he's a, can you imagine how well I'd done if I got some sleep? So he is absolutely enthralled, and he writes his strip, and he wakes up the next morning, he looks at it, and he goes, no, not quite it. Wait, I've got it. I've got the idea for the perfect strip, and onward he would go. And I remember hearing that story, and I remember that I heard that story just about the time I was experiencing that level of certainty and faith around certain creative impulses. And I was like, what is that thing? Right. And that's actually, I'm so glad you started with that story because that's really the birth of this book.
Well, let me pick up on something. As I was reading your book, I was thinking of when Howard Gardner talked about people's intelligences, that there wasn't this one intelligence that we're all supposed to have, but there are a variety of different intelligences. Can we say the same thing about then creativity?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And in fact, I think one of the, this is going to sound politically correct, but it just happens to also be true. We are coming to terms as a society with the idea that there are a variety of kinds of intelligences and that an IQ test or an SAT score are not the arbiters of those things. And just to put a fine point on it, in the realm of creativity, if you look at the research, it will show you that you need not have a particularly high IQ that's not a relevant factor in creativity. And in fact, when you measure people's creative capacities, and those are measured by how many ideas people come up with and how they elaborate on those ideas, it doesn't matter if your IQ is above 120 or not. And arguably, if it's above 147, you can even be hindered. So let's just put to the side that there's one kind of intelligence. It's not relevant in the creativity conversation.
Well, here's a really boring question then. How do you define then what creativity is?
I don't think it's a boring question at all. I think it's a vital question. And it's I had to, once I sort of began to get into the book a little bit, I had to pause and realize I owed everybody a definition to that. And here's, I'll give you two definitions, recognizing there are many. The one I hew to is that creativity is something novel with impact, but crucial to recognize that impact doesn't mean you are Elon Musk and the electric car or, you know, Einstein. Impact can be, I go into the kitchen at night and I've got five ingredients and some chicken and my kids are hungry and I can't find my phone is out of battery. There's no recipe to be had, and I come up with something. You just fed your kids. That's impact. Right. The spectrum of creativity goes from very small to very, very world-shaking, and crucially, very small, often as the building blocks to very big. But here's the other definition I'll give you, and it does come from Einstein, and I like this. He says, creativity is intelligence having fun.
I love that. I love that. As you said, intelligence and creativity don't necessarily go hand in hand, but the idea, it's the fun part of the intelligence part, right?
Yeah, because I think he's saying that you have to bring some, you ultimately have to bring some logic to the exercise. What I mean is, if you are just having fun, you wind up with no structure whatsoever. And just to go back to your very good question you couched as not such a very good question, mm-hmm. when you think about a creation that has impact, another way to think about creativity is something that is new enough to provoke change, but similar enough to catch on. And in order to catch on and be similar enough, it requires some recognition of the structures that exist. And that is an act, if not of high intellect, of an intelligence enough to understand the structures as they exist. I'm going to give you, if you'll permit, I'll give you a really weird, if not off-putting example, and that is COVID.
I had a COVID question, but no, go ahead.
You want to do your question, or you want me to just keep just railroading my way through?
Well, since you put it that way, I will ask my question. Then when we think about the virus, the COVID virus, it has been described as being very creative. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
It's so adaptable.
Say that again.
It's adaptable.
It's adaptable, and it is the two things I just described. So a big step back. To frame where we are in this conversation, we're talking about what creativity is. And when I started this book, I wanted to understand inspiration. And then I began to peel back layers to ask what creativity is. And I happened to be doing it against the backdrop of a pandemic. And I could see that there were many forces that were illustrative of creativity during this period. And as I began to understand what creativity is as its core, I was sort of gobsmacked by the idea that COVID itself is a powerful lesson in creativity. So here's why. We call it the novel coronavirus.
Right.
It spread like crazy. It did so for two reasons that are highly illustrative of what creativity is. The creativity that we exemplify in our own lives, the ones that catch on at a huge level. And here, creativity is an example. The COVID's an example of creativity because it was novel enough to flummox our immune systems, and similar enough to what had come before in our genetic code, and similar enough to how germs spread, to become, if you, for want of a better word, a mass market creative hit.
Hmm.
Now, it illustrates one more thing, and at the risk of being long-winded, I'll just add this. Creativity is not good or bad. And that's the other big point COVID represents.
That there's no kind of value judgment. Let me squeeze something in before we have to take a break in just a couple of minutes. And I appreciate how you describe COVID as this creative virus, which indeed it is. But you also write about children. And I think, you know, anyone that spends any time with children, they are the creative machines that you reference in this book. They play, they use their imagination, they experiment, they don't know about the world, so they are not constrained by rules. But what happens in fourth grade?
Yeah. So creativity, we'll doubtless get into, is an act of permission and allowing the subconscious to dribble out a bunch of ideas and dots that we connect. But a phenomenal study was done in the late 50s and early 60s around a group of young people exploring how they came up with ideas and how many ideas they came up with. And lo and behold, their creativity by certain measures began to fade around fourth grade.
Hmm.
The reason this appears to be is this is about the time, and so, as subsequent research has shown, where young people begin to become indoctrinated into the idea of saying no before they say yes. Why? Don't run in the street. Don't pick your nose and eat it. Don't eat that off the floor. Stay on your side of the back seat of the car. And what happens is all those rules we give people begin to cause young people to say no to their impulses for good reason,
sure,
but then in a way that inhibits creative impulse too.
Well, and we're almost up at a break here, but also sitting in a desk and taking notes, does that inhibit creativity?
Yeah, it can. I mean, what the subsequent research will show is that a certain culture that promotes rigid thinking around tests and rules can inhibit creativity. I want to say, and we probably don't have time to get into it before the break, there's a way to do both. You obviously can't create a ruleless society. Your kids would be at mortal risk. But there are vital ways to balance the rules and permission. And that's where intelligence having fun happens.
Well, I want to pick up on that, but we do need to take a very short break. And again, talking with Matt Richtel. He's a journalist for the New York Times. He's got a brand new book. It's called Inspired, Understanding Creativity, A Journey Through Art, Science, and the Soul. And as always on Radio Times, we want to hear from you. Email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. You may not be a world-famous artist or musician, but creativity is part of what makes us human. In our DNA, talking with Matt Richtel about his new book, Inspired, Understanding Creativity, A Journey Through Art, Science, and the Soul. Well, let's pick up where we left off, and the idea that we've got this fourth grade slump. You know, we need some rules to be able to stay safe and live with other people, but at the same time, we want to hold on to this creative impulse. How do we do both?
Yeah. I'll think of this through a parenting lens. First, if you're parenting kids, I began to notice, as someone who is parenting kids and watching people around me, sometimes we create boundaries beyond boundaries by suggesting that there are really only certain ways to say and do things.
Hmm.
A phrase I sometimes hear that now makes my skin crawl is when a parent says, "We don't do that, right?" Have you ever heard that?
Yes, I probably said that myself, but yes.
Yeah, I know, me too.
That's what those parents do sometimes. No, go ahead, Matt.
I'll give you an example. I'll explain why that kind of thing is so potent and what it represents. Setting aside that particular phrase, but thinking about what it represents, the more we give young people the idea that there's only one way to approach things and that there are boundaries everywhere that they must be aware of, the less able they will become over the long run of being able to hear ideas that may be new or different. After all, the very notion of creativity is thinking outside the rigid areas. And what happens as we get older is we start to crave creativity. We say we want it in our lives. Employers say they want it. But if we have set down really rigid rules about what we're allowed to think, not just say, and this is vital, but even think, it gets hard to access those rules. So I think just from a child rearing perspective, there's a way to let young people express and say, "That's interesting. What do you think about that?" without having them act on things that could be dangerous. One last piece, and this really stuck with me. There was a researcher who said, you know, one of the reasons parents don't like kids to say certain things is because parents secretly feel humiliated that others will judge them. And this is your kid. This is a little mind expressing an idea. Encourage that.
Well, and I think on a related matter, you also talk about how perfectionism, you know, being perfect and getting A pluses, I guess, related to that, that can also inhibit creativity.
Yeah. So on the big level, I've been very specific about young people, but let me I'm going to take this opportunity of your question to broaden a little bit and say, where do these ideas come from? What are these ideas anyway? And when I say ideas, I'm talking about for an app. I interviewed app makers for a new basketball play. I interviewed Steve Kerr. I don't know. Is this the wrong market to speak well?
You're okay. Steve Kerr. Just don't spend a lot of time on Steve Kerr. But no, go ahead.
The coach who shall not be named. I talk to musicians and artists, Yo-Yo Ma. These are people who allowed themselves at later in life to mix their understanding of the world and allow in ideas that may seem heretical, outside the lines. That's what we're talking about in terms of the foodstuff of creativity is those ideas. And now, since I've lost my train of thought over our Steve Kerr joke, can you remind me where we are?
Well, you mentioned Yo-Yo Ma, and I do want to play. We have just about 30 seconds or so. This is Yo-Yo Ma performing Bach's Cello Suite Number 1 in G Major Prelude. And then I do want to quote something that he told you from your book about creativity for him. But let's listen to a little bit of Yo-Yo Ma. Of course, the beautiful playing of Yo-Yo Ma. And what he says to you, Matt Richtel, and I'm going to quote here, this is what happens to me every time before I do something. I'm sitting there kind of bereft, depressed, not knowing which way is up. But then I start to collect information about something almost subconsciously. I collect and I collect until I feel solidity that I can look over the edge, and then you go on from there. But I underscored that just because I thought, you know, this is Yo-Yo Ma. You just sort of think, haven't you kind of mastered, you know, the art of creativity? Do you still get depressed before you play or before you practice?
Well, I don't. I'm really mixed about that. I'm not mixed, but I'm struck by that quote because I don't think he means depressed exactly like
depressed.
Yeah, depressed. I think that he is looking for that feeling, and what he realizes is that he can't necessarily will that thing. That he starts to get this building of ideas, this collection of ideas, and it goes very much to the idea that we've been talking about here. So imagine a listener's, I've referred to subconscious thoughts and children and this imagination. This is what he's talking about. In your subconscious, not something you're focused on, you have collected all kinds of information, the stuff of dreams, the stuff of mind wandering, conversation snippets, things you've observed, and those things are coming together and pulling apart and meeting in your subconscious. And occasionally, they will come together in a way that makes a lot of sense to you as having worth. And if you're paying attention, and creators are people who really pay attention to that subconscious experience, they will pop out at you as that moment of euphoria that your poet described, that Yo-Yo Ma described, that Charles Schulz described. And that's the art and science of this thing, is recognizing that those pieces are coming together and you might be able to seize one that really resonates.
Well, and he goes on to say, you know, after kind of pulling all these strands of thoughts and ideas together, then he says, I take a leap. And then you ask him, I ask Ma whether he could help but take the leap. He says, you can't help yourself. You're obsessed. And then he adds, it's like falling in love.
Yeah. And this brings me all the way back to your poet. And I so love that you started with her, because that impulse that hits when an idea becomes so powerful for the creator is, well, I just want to ask you, have you ever, does that resonate? Have you experienced that in some capacity?
Meaning?
Like, you are so hit with an idea that you're like, this idea must live.
I wouldn't call it earth shatter. Yes. I mean, I would say my smaller versions of that where I'm trying to figure out something and then I go, oh, there it is. It is a kind of aha moment.
Okay. So for the what Yo-Yo Ma's describing and the more kind of intense version of this and what Charles Schulz described, and I have known this myself, is you believe as a creator in that moment that you must forge ahead. And it's even more powerful than that. You feel as if this thing is the most important thing in front of you in the world, and that the world will be the worse if you don't go after it. And there's actually a very powerful reason for why that feeling is so intense. And I just want to be mindful of time. Or do I have time to explain that?
You do. Yes, go ahead.
Okay. So look, here's what's happening in a kind of biological sense at that moment, in a really big Darwinian sense. The status quo is pretty comfortable. It's pretty easy. And in general, it can work. In order to get yourself off the couch, creating a new piece of music, a book, an app, like the guy who created in this book called My Fitness Pal and sold it for $500 million, and to create something from whole cloth means busting through what already exists. And that takes get off your couch, move your butt energy at an extreme level. And I believe that we are wired to feel so gobsmacked by these impulses that they feel beyond important, but essential. And Yo-Yo Ma can't stop himself. He's going to create a piece of music, whether it needs to exist or not.
And that is Matt Richtel, our guest on Radio Times. Today we're talking about his new book. It's titled Inspired, Understanding Creativity, A Journey Through Art, Science, and the Soul. You can join us. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. Any questions or comments, you can always tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can always call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. But Matt, I would think for some people, being inspired and being creative either can come from a terrifying place or can be a terrifying experience. Or, you know, you could be excommunicated for, you know, for your ideas as Galileo was, you know, obviously many centuries ago.
I mean, you've captured so many vital ideas with that point. And stepping back, early in this book, I cite some of the research that really made me smack my head with like, oh, yeah, that's right. And that research is the vomit toxins research. It goes like this. These researchers wondered why we might resist our creative urges, or why so many people say they want to be creative and then somehow block that inspiration. So what they did was they took research subjects and ask them how they felt about creativity. And they would say overwhelmingly, love it, want to be creative. They would associate it with like puppies and sunshine and rainbows, for real.
Right.
And then they did a subconscious bias test. And this is the kind of test that gets done to say, you know, somebody says, well, I feel that all races and ethnicities are equal. But then they do a test and discover that, you know, some people walk across the street when a person of another race or ethnicity walks by. You familiar with that kind of subconscious bias test? Yeah.
Yep.
What they discover is subconsciously, the very people who say they love, or people like who say they love creativity, associate it with toxins and vomit and poison.
Wow. Wow. I mean, those are so so visceral, right?
Visceral, noxious. Why? Well, because creativity on an individual level can mean failure. It can mean change. At a societal level, it can mean even up to and including a kind of death, both metaphorical and literal. Metaphorical meaning, I alluded to Elon Musk, who I write a touch about in the book. Electric car, pretty cool, especially when it self-parks. But not so great if you're a company or an employee or an investor in the fossil fuel fueled car industry. And those are industries that have been displaced and workers displaced and people who need to find new jobs. And on the actual level of death, COVID really did kill people. So creativity can be extremely disruptive. It can be disruptive to the individual and to the society.
Let me read a couple of comments from our listener. Elaine says, I've experienced what she calls flow several times, and it's intoxicating. Is that what you're talking about? That, you know, that experience of being in the moment and that experience of being sort of free in the moment and open to anything and everything?
Totally, completely. And what's interesting about that flow state, you know, people have different words for it. And I confess I'm not an expert in flow state, but the way we're using it here in terms of inspiration, that is precisely what I'm talking about. And, you know, I wish we had her on the phone. I'd love to hear what happens when she gets there and whether she follows through and what happens.
Here's a comment from Charles where he talks, he sees a connection between creativity and spirituality. Your book has the word soul in the title. How do you see those connections?
I lost you. Are you there?
Yeah. Are you still there?
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
You see, it has the word soul in it. Was there more after
No,
that?
That was it.
Yeah.
Is there a connection between creativity and spirituality?
There was a spiritual intervention. So this gets tricky because spirituality means many things to different people, but to the extent that the Charles is referring to sort of getting in touch with oneself or listening to greater forces or looking for them, that is a kind of allowing the world in and allowing ideas in. To the extent that we're talking about religion, that's where this conversation gets tricky and even dicey to talk about. Is it okay if I go into that religion research?
You do, yeah.
So the very people who did the toxins and vomit research were asking about the role of religion and creativity. And they found something that I want to really put a giant asterisk before I even say it. This is not saying that religion is inherently problematic for creativity. And so I'm going to say that, tell you the research, and repeat that asterisk. But what they found was that people who really embrace a rigid religious worldview can experience limitations to their creativity. And that doesn't mean people who are religious or who believe in God are inherently less creative. Far from it. See Sistine Chapel or even Galileo. But what it means is that if you have a really rigid worldview that doesn't allow you to let in other ideas, that essentially says to you, those ideas are verboten, you can't think them, it's amoral, then you have less material to draw on creatively. And that's where a deeply religious view that is rigid can inhibit creativity.
Which kind of connects to what you were talking about, raising children, you know, being either a sort of a rigid parental style or a more open parental style.
Exactly. And it really gets at this competing truth that we have today in society. On one level, we are at the most creative period, I will argue, and I do argue in this book, in human history. There's a reason for that. And that is that the research shows that creativity happens when a lot of people connect and collaborate and compete. And that's why there have been these huge creative outposts. The book starts in Jerusalem, which was one of them in the year zero.
Yeah.
But you could think of Florence or Harlem or Silicon Valley or, I mean, just go down the list.
Well, you know, these Matt, hold on, only because we're up on a break. And I do want to pick up on that after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with Matt Richtel about his new book. It's called Inspired, Understanding Creativity, A Journey Through Art, Science, and the Soul. And he was just talking about the fact that he believes we're living in a period of incredible creativity. And as always on Radio Times, we want to hear from you. Email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call that phone number. Is 1-888-477-9499. And Matt, you were talking about this moment that we're in, and the fact that I guess even if we're not together, you know, in person because of the pandemic, people are connected certainly online. Is there something about being connected with other people that makes us more creative than we might be by ourselves?
It's what the research shows. In fact, there's a section, and I can't remember the precise numbers, but there's some mathematicians who have looked at this, and it's in the book, and you can actually see an almost exponential increase in creativity. But here's the rub. We are also at a time of tremendous, uncertainty.
Yes.
I almost use the word chaos, but I hesitate to use that because it's a little too glib. But uncertainty, and what does uncertainty do? For some people, it causes them to cling to more rigid ideas to feel safe. And you can see this playing out against our political landscape. There are those who are really clinging to some very core ideas and others who are seeking new ideas. And for those who cling, it can be hard to feel the creative impulse because the world feels so disrupted as it is.
And where it feels as if, you know, the best you can do is just to survive, that there isn't, you know, time time to even think about being creative or to let those creative juices flow.
Exactly. And in fact, there's a research paper out pretty recently that I wrote about in the New York Times that says where the researchers point out in some periods where we need the most creativity, people are least willing to embrace it because they feel that the circumstances that make things chaotic and scary and problematic also cause people to fold inward and not want to try new things.
Here's an email from Alfred. He says, I think your wonderful guest is talking about epiphany. It's a sudden solution to a problem, but you have to create a problem before you have the light bulb moment. That's an interesting comment. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, I think it's a great question and gets at two core issues. One is, and it dovetails nicely with what we were just talking about, COVID, you know, did create was a huge problem. The creativity that came out in response was extraordinary. What we solved as a society, and here I'm not a political person, so I'm not going to get into the tit for tat on that, but objectively what we solved in confronting a pandemic was really phenomenal. At the same time, I want to say that and was it Charles who wrote in?
Yes.
I want to say to Charles that what's interesting when you talk to creators is it looks like they started with a problem, but when you deconstruct it, a lot of times what happens is people came up with an authentic idea and realized they were solving a problem they weren't necessarily intending to solve. That in fact, and I'll give you an example of this in a second, but the phrase is that we all hear, necessity is the mother of invention. I think that the phrase should be authenticity is the grandparent of invention. Mm-hmm. And necessity is a subset of that. What do I mean? Well, here's an example of a guy I got to know in San Francisco. His name is Mike Lee. In early 2000s, he's going to get married. And like a lot of people who's going to get married, he has an authentic thought. I would like to look better for my wedding. And so he goes to the gym and to get fit, and they hand him on paper a calorie counter. And he's like, no, what, a calorie counter on paper? I know something about technology. I could solve this. I could make myself a calorie counter online. Fast forward 10 years, he wasn't trying to solve a problem per se. He was gobsmacked by an authentic inspiration, and he sold MyFitnessPal to Under Armour for $500 million.
Well, there you go. Talk about inspiration, right? Let's talk about someone else that you interviewed and write about. This is Rhiannon Giddens. She's from the Carolina Chocolate Drop. She's an incredible musician. And as we did with Yo-Yo Ma, let me just play a little bit of her. This is a song called I'm On My Way from her 2019 album called There Is No Other. And then we'll talk about her and creativity and inspiration.
I'm watching from my window, the curtain coming down. A blue is black as warning, a silence like a sound that rattles at the cages that hold my heart and mind. I call my name to wonder just what I hope to find.
I really like that song, I have to say. We could have kept going, but let me turn to you, Matt, and you interviewed her, a really interesting person in her own right. Grew up, as you say, with a interesting family, not far from poverty, a biracial person herself. And she becomes this, you know, incredible musician. What is her approach to creativity? How does that strike and work with her?
Yeah, well, just first, I'm so glad you played her because I got a shiver of of appreciation for her. She has got game. And one of the cool things about doing these books is you get to meet all these people. And she is the one I spent most time with for the book. She's the creator that runs the river that runs through this book. And I, as I got to know her, the reason that I selected her, what she teaches us is that Rhiannon went on a really powerful journey from having a gift to being selected by the power brokers of the music industry who wanted to turn her into something else.
Yeah.
They wanted to make her into a kind of pop country music star. And in fact, there's this moment where she's on the stage at the Country Music Awards on TV, paired with some really famous other singer, and realizes this is not who she is. And she chooses a path that is more authentic to her. And it's more authentic to the roots that you alluded to. And I fear I'll be a little too long-winded here, but I would just urge people to read her story. She grew up with slave roots on one side, white roots on the other side, a mom who came out as lesbian, some poverty, some access to really good schools because of her abilities. And she saw so much in the world that fueled a rich set of ingredients from which she draws. She is a wonderful story about how to hear your own voice and trust it.
Well, and the other thing she talked about, being a child and being, you know, basically sent out of the house. I remember that as a kid, basically kicked out of the house on a Saturday to sort of figure out what to do during the day. But she talked about boredom, you know, hours of boredom and trying to figure out how to fill that. Is boredom, the problem of boredom, is that tied to creativity?
Yeah, boredom is 100% not a problem. Boredom is where ideas, you wander and your mind wanders and you observe those things freely. And we are absolutely at a moment where that's being crowded out by easy stimulation. I have to will myself now not to succumb to the easy dopamine of my device, because I know not that that isn't pleasurable in its own right, but it's not nearly as pleasurable as having my own epiphany and experience that happens when I allow things to go quiet. I tell my kid, when my daughter comes downstairs and says, "Dad, I'm bored," I say, "Great."
But are you saying that our devices are preventing us from daydreaming, and daydreaming is tied to creativity?
Yeah, daydreaming and mind wandering, and the science bears this out, that if you let your brain go, it will find those ideas and make the connections. The devices are complicated because they're also allowing us to do this. And so it's always a question of balance. I don't want to be too stringent in saying devices are interrupting, but you have to be disciplined in letting yourself be undisciplined around mind wandering.
Here's an email from Emily. She says, "I'm struck by the similarity between creative flow that you describe and what people can experience in true manic episodes when their expansive feelings can lead to destruction. Can you speak at all about how to use limits to channel creativity constructively?"
Oh, man, that's a good question.
Yeah, it's terrific.
Where were you when I was writing?
This is Emily from Philadelphia, yes.
Well, look, I go back to first principles that creativity is neither good nor bad. And actually, one of the – so just to, I'll come to the manic state in a second to concede. I'm not sure I know the answer to that. That sounds like a particular psychological condition. But one of the issues with creativity is you really don't know how it's going to be used. And even something that starts out as well-intended can be used for great destruction. But I would argue that, yes, what Hitler did in its own way – in trying to, you know, sterilize a nation, was its own manic, insane creative vision. Mm. How do people set limits? Well, hopefully, the market forces of the world, and here I don't mean capitalism, but people stopping us, laws, the friendships around us, will set some limitations when somebody's creation seems abjectly evil.
Is there a connection between drugs and creativity, you know, whether it's marijuana or ecstasy or some of these interesting drugs that are being experimented with when it comes to therapy and psychology?
Well, therapy and psychology, different, slightly different topics, mm-hmm. And don't want to get into the healing side of it because I don't understand it. But the short answer is no, the research does not bear out that drugs help creativity. And I went, my friend, to the source on this, Carlos Santana. And yeah, that's right. I went to the mountaintop. And you know what he told me? He's in the book quoted. He told me that he tapped into more creativity when he dropped drugs and meditated than when he did drugs. And he referred to drugs as a shortcut that to getting into a flow state that didn't work as well as meditation, but meditation was harder and required discipline to let himself relax enough to be in a flow state.
And what about multitasking? What's the impact of that on creativity?
Well, I haven't studied that specifically, but I have studied multitasking in a prior book. And generally, when you multitask, you're doing more than one thing at a time, and each thing gets worse. But there is a caveat with I'll tell you that there's a terrific study about when ideas happen out of the University of California at Santa Barbara. They took really creative physicists and writers and artists and asked them to note down what they were doing when a great aha moment hit. And 20% of the time, they were doing something other than being focused on the task, on solving the problem that had been in the back of their minds. And what that suggests, so maybe they were sweeping the garage or doing the dishes. and I'm told in my house I should be doing the dishes more. Get more inspiration. So in that sense, if you're letting your mind run in the background in an unfocused way, you could do two things at once. But if you're actively thinking about a task, it's pretty hard to let your mind wander in the background.
And how about aging and creativity and even the brain? You know, where in the brain what part of the brain gets lit up by creativity? And is there an impact as we age?
Well, I love this research. Somebody did it and I wrote it down. Many creators get more creative as they age because they begin to add experience and more ideas. Some forms of creativity get hindered because they require physical energy that begins to fade over time. The part of the brain that is involved in creativity is not just one part. There's this subconscious network that I described. It allows ideas to blossom, but those ideas then get run over the analytical parts of the brain to see if they have any value. So there's the combination between the fun and the intelligence. And as long as those two things are working, you haven't hit a demented state, for want of a better word, you're in good shape.
So we're almost out of time. Final question. Are you a more creative person having written this book?
Well, I guess I don't know. I think I'm more creative when I'm not distracted by other responsibilities. And that is really a function of the period of life I'm in. Here with a New York Times series on adolescence coming out,
yes,
and doing media for the new book, I am much less creative. when I start napping again with rigor, sometime in June, I expect to be fully back.
Well, Matt Richtel, thanks so much for joining us today in Radio Times. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. And I say hi to my niece and nephew, Zach and Melina and Anna, there in Philadelphia, right off South Street.
Excellent. That's great. And Matt Richtel's book is called Inspired, Understanding Creativity, A Journey Through Art, Science, and the Soul. And yes, he's a reporter for The New York Times. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder and Paige Murray-Bessler. Closing things out with Matt Richtel's song is called Darkness. It's the story of Helen of Troy inspiring Homer to write the Odyssey.
He tells a story from darkness he sees, unharnessed his odysseys, dodging sirens in the night, gun slingers to the left, thugs to the right. Hold me now, I'm shaken. Monsters of my own.